Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batts with Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, now at the Sagamore Institute. We begin with a conversation about the Moskva, the sinking of the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet, from a photograph that has emerged from somewhere near the rescue ships or the ships that were around the Moskva before it went under. No doubt more to learn, but we're going to grow the story from the militarization of the Black Sea, which has been apparent by the Russian use of its fleet to bombard the coastline and threaten an amphibious landing, to the question now of the Baltic Sea being militarized if and when Sweden and Finland join NATO, and then into the Med and into the Atlantic. Jerry, I'm trying to imagine where this line stops between at war between sea and land and at war between sea and sea. The NATO forces, I understand there are treaty restrictions so that they cannot deploy into the Black Sea. I don't believe that's true in the Baltic Sea. It's certainly not true in the Med. And the North Atlantic, you've taught me, Jerry, there's a passageway between Greenland, Iceland, and the UK that is critical for resupply of Europe. Are all those areas now in what you'd have to say emergency standing, getting ready for worse ahead?
I think that the loss of the Moskva, the flagship of the Slava class, flagship of the Black Sea Fleet, Russia uses these Slava class cruisers as the flagships for their three principal fleets in the Pacific, in the North Fleet, and then in this Black Sea Fleet. So the loss of the Moskva, or the Moscow, the capital of the nation, has been a tremendous prestige hit against Russia and against Vladimir Putin personally. And so I think that there's going to be a desire to escalate the war horizontally to try and find other places to strike back. Putin has been clearly embarrassed. Russia has been clearly embarrassed by this. They will try to find ways to apply pressure elsewhere, and that pressure may come at sea, so that you might see them surge some of their very advanced nuclear submarines out into the Atlantic to try and interfere or harass arms shipments that might be coming from the United States or even from Canada. They may try to interfere, for instance, with our allies, the Japanese, which they have ongoing territorial conflicts with in the Pacific. The sea becomes a natural place for Russia to go, where it thinks that perhaps it won't be triggering direct responses if they were, that would happen if they would attack targets inside Poland, a NATO ally, or one of the Baltic or nations, which are also NATO allies. Putin's going to try to find places to bring pressure that are away from the centers of gravity that he has touched so far, so disastrously for him. So he may find, he may try to go to sea to do that.
Also, this suggests that a flagship, no matter how well armed and how well protected and thought of, is vulnerable to launched missiles, land-to-sea missiles, similar or not even as powerful as the ones we're told that are called carrier killers or Guam killers in the Pacific. Does this suggest a rethinking of the ability of the fleet to project power in the Pacific and the Atlantic?
It does. I think there's going to be a serious conversation about the future of the surface force. I'm not saying that the surface force goes away, but we need to understand that the huge investments that have been made to anti-ship cruise missiles, which skim along the top of the ocean, anti-ship ballistic missiles, which, you know, reach, you know, hundreds of thousands of feet and then come down in a near vertical plane, that those things might, in fact, be much more difficult to defend against than what we had previously expected. I think that we've been in the United States Navy, been looking at this very seriously since the 1970s. But what does it mean about how we deploy our forces at the beginning of combat operations and then subsequently as we move through the different phases of war? I think that this emphasizes the importance of submarines as the frontline contact force because the submarines are able to operate very stealthily under the sea. They have a great deal of lethality. They have their own cruise missiles and their own torpedoes, so that may place greater emphasis on submarine investment by the United States and its allies going forward, and it may cause nations like Russia to step back and change the nature of their own investments. The one thing that I would also say, though, is that submarines really carry no naval presence value. Because they're not seen, they don't have an effect upon the diplomatic environment as you're shaping the war, or for that matter, shaping the peacetime. That's where these ships like the Slavic class, which are very large, very impressive, have a role to play as they tend to shape or influence or coerce those around them by their mere presence. And yet, because the Slava itself, the Moskva, appears to have been such a fragile egg upon her first contact in combat, that influence may be degraded going forward.
And finally, Jerry, right now we're looking at the Russian Navy, certainly not a premier Navy from the Cold War days. It didn't have the carrier strike groups that we deploy. But China's watching this. What do they learn? We have about a little more than a minute. What do they learn from these photographs, from the fact that it was hit by two missiles that were relatively not as sophisticated as the ones that China has, and that the Chinese fleet, to my memory, has mixed elements of former Russian warships and also Russian thinking?
Yeah, so the Chinese bought three Sovremeny-class Russian cruisers or large destroyers, and then reverse engineered them to essentially create the Chinese Navy. Chinese ships have many of the, especially some of their older ones from the 90s, have similar discrepancies or difficulties in them that the Russians did. A lot of ordnance above deck, a lot of exposed weapon systems, very thin skins. However, the Chinese have begun to evolve their surface force to look more like the American Navy, with sunk vertical launch system tubes inside them, so they're floodable magazines, so if there is a missile attack and penetration. But I think the overall question here is...
We have about 30 seconds, Jerry. Go ahead.
Moving away from conscript navies, the idea that we're just going to take the young men and women off the street, put them into the Navy, give them a minimal amount of training, and in fact, going for a highly technical force like what we see with the Russian submarine force, that's probably the direction that we'll see both of those navies move in the future.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy, retired aviator, Sagamore Institute, the sinking of the Moskva, the story so far. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.